During this Lenten season, we've called this sermon series, You Are Accepted. That line comes from the theologian Paul Tillich, who summarized the good news of Christian faith in a famous sermon by stating simply, you are accepted. You are accepted, and the only thing for you to do is just accept the fact that you are accepted. Pointed, blunt, simple, good news. But perhaps it's easier said than done, right? Most of us are pretty good at keeping a list of reasons why we're unacceptable. We keep lists of things about ourselves that we don't even want to accept. And so we have a hard time hearing the good news that God accepts and forgives and loves us in spite of all that stuff. We worry that our desires or our doubts or our shame or some other stuff we can come up, we worry that that puts us in the unacceptable camp. Today we'll address one more area of struggle for many of us. We wonder whether we're good enough. We wonder whether we're complete enough, whole enough. We wonder whether our weaknesses and our blind spots make it hard for God to accept us and to receive us. We wonder whether our failures to fit in or our failures to meet some standard of perfection or some standard of what's supposed to be normal make it impossible for us to live our lives as God's adopted, beloved children. Now, Leah had a big job because that reading from John 9 was a long one, like last week, but I wanted you to hear the whole thing from beginning to end. There's a lot going on in this story, and we won't be able to deal with all of the details this morning. On the most obvious level, a man who is blind from birth receives his sight when Jesus heals him in a sort of disgusting way. And yet that miraculous healing could have been told in a few pointed sentences. So why elaborate it all in such lengthy detail? Interestingly, John's gospel doesn't refer to the event as a miracle, though it is one. It refers to it as a sign. That's one of John's favorite words. It's a sign. This healing encounter between Jesus and the man who receives his sight is recorded for us as a sign that can illumine our own lives and help us see with more clarity. It can open new and exciting paths for us today if we're willing to receive it as a sign. Now, certainly the story itself and the sign of this man's healing is meant to help us confess, along with this man, as he does in the story, that Jesus is Messiah and Lord, the powerful presence of God in our midst. Certainly the story invites us to put ourselves in this guy's shoes, this guy who has experienced life-transforming, life-changing healing. And when we sing the lyrics to Amazing Grace, that's exactly what we sing. We sing his words, I was blind, but now I see. I want to approach this story from a slightly different angle. I want to draw your attention to the details in the story having to do with the importance of being part of a community, of being included. The story unfolds in a way that draws our attention to the difference between belonging to a community on the one hand and the pain of being barred or excluded from it on the other. So here are those little points in the story that draw us in this direction. When the man came back from the pool where he had washed the mud from his eyes, now freshly sighted and able to see, his neighbors, do you remember their question? His neighbors asked, isn't this the guy who used to sit and beg? His neighbors knew this man as a person who didn't belong, as a guy without a supportive family structure. They knew him as a person with no valuable skills. They knew him as a man who had nothing to offer, no resources he could add to the life of the neighborhood. Every day, He went to the same well-trafficked spot. He sat down and he held out his hat for charity from whoever happened to pass by. Now, that begging life isn't a full life. This is the life of a person who can't quite find a productive role in the local community and in the local economy. So while it's, yes, a story about a person who received his sight, it's also very much a story about a person who didn't belong, who was then restored to the neighborhood, to the community, and to the economy. The controversy that surrounds this guy after he gets his sight back is almost comical in the way it's told. The neighbors are confused about whether this is actually the guy who used to sit and beg or just someone who looks sort of like him. The man's parents are called in to testify, but they're leery. They don't want to say much because we're told, verse 22, anyone who confessed Jesus to be the Messiah would be put out of the synagogue. So they're trying to sort of weave and dodge and not say much. Well, he's old enough. Go talk to him. And in fact, the outcome of the story is exactly that. Verse 34, the Pharisees drive the man who has received his sight out of the synagogue. He can no longer belong. The experience of being barred from belonging can be one of the most painful experiences of our lives. It happens in some form to all of us. And we all have to deal with a fear of being driven out, driven away, excluded, uninvited, not included. When we're young and in school, it might involve games at recess, which lunch table we sit at, with whom, whether we're invited to a party. These experiences of being barred from community continue as we grow up. Of course, they don't stop in later years. In our social lives, in our work lives, in our family lives, these can be painful experiences. They follow us all the way into the later years when we fear losing our homes, losing our ability to drive, losing our independence, losing our sense of dignity and value that comes from being an active part of a community's life. It's good news, of course, to hear that we're accepted and we're loved by God, but we want that good news to be more concrete and more ordinary than that. God accepts me, loves me, great, but we want a little something more than that. What we really want is for God's acceptance and love to be expressed to us in the acceptance and love of a real family, of a neighborhood, of a community, of a workplace, of a congregation like this one. And while all of us feel this intense need for acceptance and for belonging, no one feels it as acutely as people who live with disabilities. That's, in fact, one way we can hear this story this morning. It's a story that invites us to reflect on the graceful and powerful experience by everyone when those with disabilities are included and welcomed. When we talk about disabilities, of course, there's a wide range of intellectual and physical disabilities. You might think about the great work done by Tri-Valley Services here in our own community. They focus not on what people can't do, but what they can do. At Tri-Valley, people with disabilities are included as productive and valuable people in our community and in our economy. They have work to do. They put stuff together. They assemble furniture. They shred documents. People who want to get rid of stuff. I don't know why you all want to get rid of so many documents. What's up? They're productive people, and they're included. And because of the wonderful leadership of Barb McCord, they get to work in a state-of-the-art greenhouse that grows many of the plants we enjoy in the community and here in our own congregation. I think Tri-Valley is a model of what's possible in our whole community. There's no reason to fixate or dwell on what we can't do. Let's help each other figure out the things we can do, the things we're good at. Let's widen our imaginations about how all of us can employ whatever range of capacities we have to make a positive contribution. Let's do the extra work to make room here in our congregation and in our neighborhoods, in our schools, in our workplaces for people whose range of skills or range of capacities or range of abilities might be a little different. Now we're learning. I think we're learning. We have a long way to go, but we're learning. On April 10th, not too long from now, Sesame Street will introduce a new Muppet character named Julia. I've seen her. She's cute. Julia will be the first character on Sesame Street who lives with a disability. She has autism, which will be explored, for example, in storylines that help viewers understand that Julia is amazing at some things, like learning song lyrics, but is easily startled at unexpected things like loud noises. My nephew Jaden is on the autism spectrum. He's a fun, active, talented, smart kindergartner. He's fast, especially if he wants to get away from you, and he usually does. He's fearless in exploring the world, but he has to be welcomed and received in a way that's a little bit different than other children. His parents, my brother Matt and his wife Sherry, are doing an amazing job as parents. And luckily, they have a great network of support and encouragement that makes the work of raising Jaden more sustainable. They have had help and encouragement from all kinds of people, from autism support groups, from local educators and therapists. They've had the help and support of our local school district, and especially from caring and talented paraprofessionals that accompany Jaden throughout the school day one-on-one. Jaden's been waiting for a specially trained service dog for a couple of years now, and just this past month, that dog, Bingo, finally arrived. It's a service dog trained specifically to comfort and protect a child with autism like Jaden. And the dog even gets to go to school with him, which will be kind of cool and be part of class and be part of the school. And the teachers and the administrators and Jaden's classmates and their families have been wonderful in expressing their gladness to have this service dog along with Jaden and just make him part of the classroom. Some of us here in this room this morning live with different kinds of disabilities. Almost all of us live in close and caring relationships with different people, family or friends, who live with a disability of one sort or another. Our family holiday celebrations in Tulsa with Stephanie's family usually includes her cousin, Luann. Luann's now in her 60s. She lives with some cognitive limitations and a limited ability for social interaction. Her parents raised her at home until she was the age when she would graduate from high school, and then she went to live in this wonderful place called Home of Hope, where they just do an incredible job of caring for people like Luann, with various kinds of disabilities. At that place, she experiences family and friendship and all sorts of activities and trips and work designed just for her. That community, like Tri-Valley, focuses on what she can do, is not worried about what she can't. And part of that process for me of becoming part of Stephanie's family was learning how to relate to Luann. And it was awkward for me at first, and I kind of struggled to figure out how to talk to her and what to talk about. And that's just part of the process. It took me some time to get over my hang-ups about the ways that she was different and interacted in different ways. And just to learn to engage her as the funny, quiet, sweet, intelligent, perceptive person that she is. I hope this story from John 9 can encourage all of us to pay more attention to how we welcome and include people who have different abilities and different challenges in life. But I also hope we can all accept a fundamental truth about ourselves as well. And that's this: we aren't normal. There is no normal. And there's nothing all that interesting about being normal anyway, right? All of us have different ranges of capacities and different kinds of abilities. And part of life, part of growing up, deepening and maturing, is learning to accept our many limitations without getting hung up on them. We don't have to be strong in every way. We don't have to have every gift and every skill. We're good at some things and not so good at others. And in spite of that, God loves us and accepts us and makes room for us. So Jesus encounters a person born blind and heals him in a way that restores him, that includes him, makes him part of the community again. No more sitting and begging for this guy. And Jesus judges the ways that we exclude people from dignity and belonging, whether that's in church, in school, in workplaces, or in our community. Whether our failures to include others are mean-spirited or more likely just the result of indifference and a lack of effort, Jesus still invites us to a bigger and more beautiful life. We have the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990. That's good. But we're still growing and we're still learning. We're learning how important it is to have sidewalks and buildings and bathrooms that are accessible for everyone. We're learning that the problem with those who have disabilities is not a medical problem, as if they need to be fixed so that they can be normal, whatever that is. The problem, rather, is the challenge for all of us to become a more welcoming community, a more welcoming society, so that we can make it easier for all different kinds of people with all different ranges of ability to participate and be a part of the group and live a meaningful life. We're learning to change the way we talk. We're trying our best not to use the disability as an adjective to describe the person. So we try not to say the blind man, as if the blindness is the only interesting thing about him. Rather, we refer to a man who is blind. And that way of speaking makes it clear that there's much more to this man than his blindness. This story is a sign of the kinds of changes that can happen in all of us when we encounter the living Christ. We deepen, we expand, we grow, we become capable of living and loving in ways that weren't open to us before. We become less interested in what's normal and more attuned to whatever abilities and strengths are present in us and in others. We make more space in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our workplaces, and here in our own congregations, so that everyone, absolutely everyone, can be welcomed into the healing love of God.